This is Sony artisan Miguel Quiles, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Mike Sharkey James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 21, a bizarre twist in the monkey selfie saga. In this episode, the monkey selfie lawsuit gets even weirder. Camera sales appear to finally be leveling off. There may be hope for concert photographers after all. A photographer earns some good karma. Samsung may be getting out of the photography business. And Seattle police look for a drone owner who crashed into a Ferris wheel. All that and more in episode 21 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Miguel, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. If you haven't seen Miguel's work, you've been missing out. His star is on the rise, and he's absolutely crushing it out there. He's also a really great guy and a good friend. Now, you can check out his work at miguelquiles.com. That's MiguelQuiles.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 21 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Before we get into today's show, I wanted to thank you all for entering our giveaway for the Sony A7R Mark II and let you all know that I read each and every one of the reviews you leave us on iTunes and wherever else I can find them. The feedback has been amazing, and I want to thank you guys all so much. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharkey James. Let's hit it. An already ridiculous situation just got more ridiculous. Ridiculouser? I know it's not a word, but that's okay. This ridiculous story deserves such a word. Now, you may remember the monkey named Naruto in Indonesia who took some selfies using a camera set up by photographer David Slater, sparking a copyright lawsuit with the animal rights group PETA, maintaining that that monkey is the rightful copyright owner to those photos. Yeah, that ridiculous story. Well, as if it wasn't bad enough that PETA's suing on behalf of a monkey, now there's questions about its identity and gender. See, I told you it was ridiculous. According to the Washington Post, Slater's lawyers filed defense papers last week, arguing that PETA can't prove the identity of the monkey in the now-famous selfies. They say, quote, "The allegation that Naruto is in fact the monkey who took the monkey selfies is contradicted by other allegations in the complaint. Specifically, in the wildlife book, Mr. Slater describes the monkey who took the photographs as a female, not a male like Naruto," end quote. Now, Slater also claims that PETA had previously referred to the monkey photographer as a female as well. And back in September 2015, Motherboard did its own investigation, consulting a researcher named Carol Berman, who has PhD students working with the same monkeys in Indonesia. Berman says, quote, "I can say with confidence that the monkey in the full body photo is a juvenile male," end quote. She claims in that photo that it's obvious by anatomical evidence, let's say, that the monkey is a male, but she's not sure that it's the same monkey in each of the photographs. Slater tells Motherboard, quote, "All you need to know is PETA have no proof that they are talking about the same monkey. They hope you will buy their stunt because an expert is willing to say her monkey is the one in my photos without proof," end quote. According to the U.S. Copyright Office, photos must be the product of human authorship in order to be copyrightable. So they seem to be barking up the wrong tree here. Tree, monkey, too easy. Not going to go there. Except for I kind of just did, didn't I? Oh well, let's move on. Now, what PETA is wanting is, quote, "all proceeds from the sale, licensing, and other commercial uses of the monkey selfies," end quote, "to be put toward conservation." Yeah, I'm not thinking that's going to happen here. How is this still a thing? Seriously, this is why the courts are clogged. Silly lawsuits like this one. As I said in a previous episode, the monkey isn't even aware he took a photograph or she took a photograph. It's busy flinging its poo all over the forest. That's all it cares about. That and finding food. Flinging poo and eating food. You see the circle right there? They don't care about photos. Hopefully we'll have a resolution to this one of these years. But in the meantime, definitely, it's gotten ridiculouser. As we all know, it's been a rough couple of years for camera makers. All camera makers. as DSLR sales have declined and mirrorless continues to mature. But the decline in sales isn't all due to mirrorless, of course. People who otherwise bought cameras for their photography often use the camera that they most always have with them, and that's their smartphone. And as a result, many stop buying cameras altogether. But you know what? Your camera doesn't get the Facebook after all, does it? That's right, I said the Facebook. And you kids can get off my lawn while you're at it too. In all seriousness though, smartphones have put a serious dent into the bottom line of camera makers, no doubt about it. Now you may remember the alarming chart that Mayflower Concepts published about a year or so ago in December 2014, showing the massive decline in sales of compact digital cameras as smartphones took off. That chart also showed the measurable drop in DSLR sales and the growth in the mirrorless sector as well. Well, the chart's info is based on data published by CIPA, that's CIPA, the Japanese-based Camera and Imaging Products Association, and the latest numbers show that things appear to be leveling off. And while that's not the huge increase in sales that camera makers would like to see, it's definitely encouraging. Maintaining sales, after all, is a lot better than losing sales. Now, Mayflower points out that while mirrorless camera sales were taking off for a solid 2 years, those too have now leveled off. We all know that mirrorless has eaten away at DSLR sales, and the camera market as a whole hasn't really seen an increase so much as people have just chosen a different kind of camera. They've gone from DSLR to mirrorless, so they've exchanged one camera for another, in other words. And mainly, that's been Sony's offerings. So let's parse that for a second. DSLR sales were down. Now, who has that hurt? The big two, of course, Canon and Nikon. As I've pointed out here on the podcast, the rise of mirrorless has really done a number on them. But there's no doubt in my mind that Canon is going to field a serious mirrorless system in 2016. Now, we'll see about Nikon. They must offer up something to compete. They just must. Everyone is saying that they can't afford not to. Now's the time. Get into the mirrorless market in a big way, or lose market share even further. And I'm all for it. I'd love to see them knock Sony around. Sony's the king of the mountain right now. Imagine what we'll see in mirrorless if Canon and Nikon release systems which people actually want to buy. And that benefits all of us, so I say bring it on. You know, if people want a red sweater and all you make are blue and black ones, maybe it's time to be in the red sweater business. So come on, guys. It's time for red sweaters. I don't know how we got on sweaters. I'm the one who brought it up. Sorry. You may recall that in October 2015, we learned that photographer Dana Grzynski came to the rescue when a wedding photographer didn't bother showing up to shoot a couple's wedding. She learned of what happened from her cousin, who was actually at that wedding, then surprised the couple with a free photo shoot that faithfully recreated their wedding for them. Well, the story got out and it went incredibly viral. And since then, she's been inundated with requests for her services, as you might imagine. Grzynski, who's a Michigan-based receptionist and assistant at a chiropractor's office, received over 800 emails, and about half of them were wanting to hire her. I mean, when was the last time any of us had 400 people wanting to give us money, right? That's craziness. Due to all that, she's now working part-time at that job so she can pursue her photography business and meet the demand as a result of her act of kindness. The photographer tells MLive, quote, "I'm extremely humbled and thankful that my story has gotten out there. I hope it helps people be a little kinder to one another," end quote. Now, I'm not a huge fan of shooting for free, as we talked about last episode, but this is one that I think most of us would agree was not only good to do, but helped her out as well. I'm all for good photo karma, and she definitely got some. In 2015, we saw musicians seemingly launch an all-out assault on photography, and specifically the rights of photographers, as many of them sought to grab all rights to photographs taken of themselves. Taylor Swift, Foo Fighters, Dweezil Zappa, and Janet Jackson all found themselves making headlines with the over-the-top contracts that photographers were required to sign. Well, now a number of the media industry's biggest associations and organizations have published an open letter to performers on behalf of thousands of photographers and journalists in the United States. The letter is called, quote, "An open letter to performers regarding standard terms and conditions for photographer and reporter credentials," end quote. It's been signed by 11 major groups so far, including the National Press Photographers Association, Poynter Institute, American Society of News Editors, Newspaper Association of America, and the Society of Professional Journalists. In the letter, it says, quote, as performers have become increasingly vocal about protecting their intellectual property rights. Far too many are at the same time exploiting those who visually report on them through onerous credentialing restrictions. It's patently offensive to demand the absolute right to both use our members' work for the performer's direct benefit and to demand the absolute right to run our business by reserving editorial control." End quote. So what the groups are hoping to do here is have a meaningful conversation with artists to create agreements that are mutually beneficial. And I think that's reasonable. I've shot a ton of concerts over the years. We're talking some of the biggest names in music at the time, and this was never a problem. I really do think that this stems from the era that we live in now. We're bombarded with imagery 24/7. Artists have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and other social media to keep up with now, and there's a seemingly constant need to be posting content. And to me, it looks like they view professional photographers as a legitimate source of free content for them, and that is just not cool. You know, pay them maybe. How's that for a concept? And they wouldn't even have to pay them much. The cost of photography is cheaper than ever. These artists are making a boatload of money at their concerts, and they don't even want to pay for quality photography, and that's just wrong. On our site, user Bob Cooley said, quote, "I spent the first 15 years of my photography career as a photojournalist and covered hundreds of shows. I'm glad I don't have to deal with the nonsense that photographers shooting concerts today have to. One shouldn't have to jump through ridiculous hoops just to do their jobs." End quote. I couldn't possibly agree with Bob more. It's gotten way past out of control, and it never used to be anywhere near like this. He also pointed out that it's the photographers in the pit, most of whom are working press, who are going to create stunning images and make the artists look their best. It's the audience who are getting the horrible shots that you see out there of artists, and they're uploading them to social media instantly. But you can't really pick on them without a massive backlash now, can you? And that's what Janet Jackson found out recently, and she backpedaled big time. So, photographers, once again, bear the brunt. Now, maybe that'll stop since these organizations are on it, but we'll see. I would like to see them come up with an industry standard agreement that all parties will agree is fair and equitable. That would be wonderful. Something that is standardized and everyone knows going in what the terms and conditions are. There's no gun to your head making you sign it or else. And you can get in, get your shots, you know, your three songs, and get out of there and know that no one owns all your photos just because you had to sign something. That would be great. Or how about this? No agreement. Stop making photographers sign agreements altogether, just like it's been for decades. If you use the app InstaAgent for Instagram, you might want to reconsider. According to a German software developer from Peppersoft, the app sends your Instagram username and password in plain text to a third-party server rather than encrypting it. That is not good because your info can be intercepted at any point along the way. As a result, the app has been banned by both Apple's as well as Google's app stores after it was discovered that the app collects that info and reportedly also posts ads to your photo feeds without your permission. Yeah, that is just not cool. In an interview with the BBC, the app's creator, Turker Bayram, says that he made a, quote, "terrible mistake," end quote, in saving the logins of users to a server. He says he was working on a new feature in the app that never got released and that he has no idea why his app started posting ads to users' accounts. Yeah, right. Because your app just on its own does this. And it just happens to post ads, which benefit you. Yep. We all believe that. Before it was pulled, InstaAgent was the number one free app in the UK, Canada, and many other countries around the world. So untold hundreds of thousands of people's logins were compromised here. If you have this app, it's recommended that you delete it immediately and not only change your Instagram login, but all others if they're the same. Remember, once hackers and the like have your username and password, they try those everywhere. So it might be a good idea to use a third-party service like 1Password or LastPass, etc., and have a different login for each service. That way you're more secure. Password managers like those make it a lot easier these days. So make sure you check and see if you're using InstaAgent, and if you are, delete that immediately. Well, the rumor mill is swirling again, and this time it's Samsung. And that rumor is that they're exiting the camera business. Wait, you didn't know that Samsung makes cameras? See, now maybe that's part of the problem right there. And they're actually pretty good cameras too. Since mid-September 2015, so about 2 months now as I record this, some odd things have been happening surrounding Samsung. First, the Korean news website News Tomato reported on September 17th that Samsung was planning on shutting down its camera business. Now don't forget, Samsung is a South Korean company. So when a news site there in Korea has a tip from an industry insider, one tends to lend a little credence to that. Now, 6 days later, Imaging Resource published an article in which it says that Samsung was not exiting the camera business and that the new Samsung NX1 released last year looks to be selling fairly well. And by all accounts, it's a really good camera. They reached out to Samsung for comment and got this, quote, "Withdrawing from the camera business is not true, and there is no official plan to stop production of cameras and lenses. Samsung continuously analyzes the varying needs and requirements of consumers in each market and region very carefully. However, we do not officially comment on rumors or speculation," end quote. So if you go by that, straight from Samsung, it would appear that there's no truth to the rumor. They couldn't have been more clear with that statement. But then, on October 21st, 2015, the respected Korean business newspaper, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, it's Asia with an E on the end. Who knows how you pronounce that? Reported that Samsung was shuttering its camera unit. They said that it had suspended its camera development and has reassigned its workforce to its smartphone camera and medical equipment optics businesses. Now, why would a respected business newspaper there in Korea report that if they didn't have solid info about it? Their reputation is on the line. So who knows what's up with that? But here's where it gets weird. 4 days later, a Texas-based photography enthusiast named John had a live chat with Samsung support in which the support person on the other end confirmed the impending closure. And he screenshotted that, of course, for all of us to see. But since then, others in the photography industry have asked about this in Samsung's tech support chat, and they get denials. On October 26, 2015, Petapixel reached out to Samsung's reps here in the United States, and their official response is as follows. Quote, "Samsung does not comment or speculate on rumors," end quote. But the latest news is that Samsung's NX1 is being discontinued in Europe, Hong Kong, and Australia. And that's pretty odd considering the holiday season's upon us. You think they'd want to at least sell a bunch more, right? Guess not. We're also hearing that production of the NX1 has stopped completely. Of this, EOS HD says, quote, "This is the clearest sign yet that Samsung may be about to exit the camera business or scrap the NX platform and proceed with a new system," end quote. Now, you may know that Samsung is ginormous. They're huge. If they wanted to, they can scrap the NX platform, create something completely different, and maybe go toe-to-toe with Sony and make things really interesting. It's also important to note that there hasn't been a whole lot out of Samsung's camera division, though, since they announced the NX500 and the NX3300 way back in February of 2015. So things are starting to look a little sketch over there at Samsung. But then again, rumors were that Sony A-mount was dead. I proclaimed it dead. And then Sony turned around and announced a new A68 camera. Now, mind you, it's a fairly unexciting lower-end camera, but still. So we'll see. Maybe Samsung's camera division has zombie status, just like Sony A-mount. Looks and smells dead, but it's technically still kicking. And it wants to eat your brains. Okay, maybe not that last part. Virtual reality is definitely maturing, and I think that 2016 is going to be the year when it really breaks out. But people have been saying that for 20 years now, or more. So there's that. But this year alone, we've seen a lot of movement in VR, so it looks like now is going to be the time. With over 300,000 high-res photos of Mount Everest, Iceland-based Solfar Studios has created a VR experience it calls Everest VR, along with the help of Hollywood's RVX, a studio in the VFX business, that's visual effects. Together, they've created what's being touted as the most realistic Everest climbing experience that most of us will ever experience, short of actually making the climb ourselves. The massive amount of images were used to create an ultra-realistic, definitive 3D model of Everest, and through an immersive VR headset, virtual climbers will feel like they're actually standing and moving through locations there. Okay, you might want to stand in front of your open freezer, though. You don't want to try this in July out by your pool. Not the same experience at all. Solfar Studios says, quote, "Preparing for your expedition at base camp, you will traverse Kumba Ice Falls, scale Lhotse Face, ascend the Hillary Step, and finally conquer the summit of Everest. You will learn to respect the mountain. You may even survive the encounter. You will leave the experience feeling like you were there, end quote. You know, as realistic as things get, there's nothing like actually being there. This sounds really cool, but it's not exactly the same thing. But viable VR technology is clearly coming, and at some point, I think we'll all have the ability to not only consume it, but create it as well. Right now, it's really expensive. There's a massive amount of applications for VR technology, though, and it's not quite there yet, but it's taking huge steps in that direction, and I think that's pretty cool. Or in this case, cold. Very, very cold. Brrr. Watch for Everest VR on VR platforms sometime in 2016. And don't forget to get your freezer ready. With the rise of camera drones, there are no shortage of stories about people with more money than sense doing unwise things with them. This time, on Wednesday, November 11th, 2015, someone thought it'd be a good idea to fly their drone through the spokes of the giant Ferris wheel in Seattle, Washington. Because of that, police are now looking for them following damage caused as the drone hit the wheel, causing it to crash to the ground below. Yeah, tell me they didn't think that was a bad day in the making, right? Now, it didn't damage the popular Ferris wheel called the Seattle Great Wheel. That thing's made of metal. It is definitely going to take a hit by a drone. But it put a basketball-sized hole in a plastic dining table below and could have seriously hurt someone if someone was sitting there. Seattle police are trying to hunt down the owner, and this further illustrates why the United States government is racing to get a national drone registry up and running by the end of this year. We'll see if they can get it done. You never see the government move fast, do you? But incidents like this and all the incursions that we're having with airplanes and helicopters, etc., is causing them to move quickly before someone gets hurt. Now, the details of that haven't been hammered out yet, but if every drone can be tracked back to a responsible party, they'd have their man by now. It's a dude. It's gotta be, right? Let's face it, women have more sense than we men. You won't find a woman who thinks it's a good idea to fly through the spokes of a Ferris wheel. But dudes? No doubt. The Seattle Police Department reports that around 4:45 p.m. that day, a security guard heard a strange buzzing noise. When he looked up, he saw the DJI Phantom crash into the center of the 175-foot Ferris wheel. Again, not a good idea at all. What the heck is wrong with people? If you want to fly near a Ferris wheel, pretty much the only way you're going to make that happen is by coordinating it with whoever's in charge of it. Don't have permission? Don't even try it. Now, you may recall that back in June 2015, right there in Seattle, a drone crashed into a building during a parade, fell to the ground, and knocked a woman unconscious. And this is why we can't have nice things like Mom said. It's always the bad apples that mess it up for the rest of us. Remember, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And this guy learned that the hard way. At very, very least, he's out a drone. If the Seattle police find him, not good. It's going to cost them a lot more than a drone to take care of this. A police department spokesperson talked to Ars Technica and says that without a witness or the pilot coming forward, it's, quote, nearly impossible, end quote, to identify them. You know, many drone owners put their name or at very least their phone number on their drone, and that's so it can be returned to them if it's ever found. But I'm guessing this guy doesn't want to be found. Like I said, if he's ever found, it's going to cost him more money in legal fees and replacing that damaged table than it would be just to buy a new drone and move on. Camera drones are a lot of fun, and irresponsible people are ruining it for the rest of us. So we thank you for that. No, we don't. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 21 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. Now, if you head over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show, or you can give us a call at area code 206-333-9308. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm LensShark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 22. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.